Welcome to From Idea to Impact, a podcast from Arabella Advisors that focuses on the people at the heart of our work, people who inspire us with their efforts to create positive change and impact in communities across the country and around the world.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Lisa Ratliff. She is the acting executive director at Kaboom, which is a nonprofit organization focused on creating play spaces for children. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with Lisa Ratliff, who's the acting executive director at Kaboom, which is an organization focused on play for kids. And I'm sure we'll talk more about Kaboom in a moment, but before we get there, Lisa, I'd love to hear from you kind of what were the, you know, circumstances of your childhood? What are your sort of earliest memories of play? What was your experience with the areas that Kaboom is focused on?
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad and excited to be here. And I think telling our personal stories and sharing insights about our life is really important. And nothing better to talk about than childhood. And 100% of who I am stems from my childhood. My very first memory in life, besides getting stung by a bee, I think I got stung by a bee when I was like one or two, but my very first formed memory in life.
That is one of the hazards of being outdoors, right?
Yeah, no, good memory. I love the bees. But one of my very first memory besides that, it was on the playground. Everything that I have as my superpowers was built there. And this first memory was I was going to daycare. I am a child of Head Start, wonderful daycare center, Alexander Rose. I could draw the playground to this day. I've got calluses on my hand. I was a monkey bar queen, but I didn't have the courage to jump off the swing. All my friends, my whole squad, they would jump off the swings and it was just like, yes, I did that. And I didn't have the courage to do it. And they pumped me up. I jumped off the swing. And I passed out. I completely passed out. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, when I opened my eyes, I was like, okay, I don't know how long I was out. I will never do that again. But then there's my hype squad and they were like, yes, do that again. And I never forget that. That lesson taught me how to take risks. And if you ask anybody who knows me, probably one of the reasons I'm in the position I am is I'm a huge risk taker. I love to walk through the fire, and that playground, those people, those kiddos that I played with, they are absolutely the foundation of who I am.
That's amazing. Because a lot of us, I think, didn't have those opportunities and can't sort of make that connection between that kind of earliest experience of play and where we are now. I mean, how do you feel that it contributed to your journey to work in the nonprofit space, particularly and with children?
Yeah, I'll tell you, my journey wasn't, you know, like rose colored. And so I had what some would be described as a tough childhood, but for me it was magic. I remember nothing but magic, but I was born to teen parents. My mom was 15 when she had me. My dad was 16. My mom was a brain. She was just like an academic, amazing young woman, but she lived in a family with her dad was an alcoholic, just a lot of trauma at home. And she was white. And she found my dad, who was like the star athlete at school. He was not so strong on the academics and had a really rough upbringing, lots of crime, lots of suffering and loss. But he came from a family full of grit that knew how to get things done. So my mom met him and she had these circumstances at home. She's 15 years old. Now she's pregnant with this little brown baby, and she hid it from her family because at the same time, her father, who was an alcoholic, he was also didn't care for Black people. And so the way I was born into this world was my mom went into labor and it was, oh, by the way, I'm having a baby from that guy you met, Charles. But I came into this world with those as my circumstances and just a lot of tough obstacles along the way. There was, I grew up in government housing. Like I said, I went to Head Start, and there was just a lot of tough circumstances, a lot of death, a lot of crime. But they created this human that has like just this love for life, this love for people. And I think it's because my parents surrounded me with this amazing community and told me, you know, whatever they can do, you can do better. You know, there's always a solution. If you find your people and your hype squad, then the world is yours for the taking. And despite the fact that I had all of these kind of tough circumstances, I also had this community, almost just this surround sound that was so special. And I wouldn't trade anything for the world, anything about my childhood for the world. But everything in that experience created the me of today. And I think it's one of the things that has really drawn me to work at an organization like Kaboom that recognizes why childhood is so important. And just fast forwarding you a little bit through my life, I married my childhood sweetheart. We went to high school together. In fact, he was at the same Head Start I was at, though we didn't know each other. Oh, but yeah, we were little kids together, and we've been married for like 26 years. But I ended up leaving home when I was 17 and off into the sunset with my childhood sweetheart who joined the Air Force. We went to college together. We traveled around the world. We spent 6 years in the UK and just were really exposed to this world that I had never even knew existed. And then I became a mom at around 26. I had a daughter. I have two girls. I had all these. I had graduated with a degree in international business, undergraduate in marketing, international marketing, big plans for my life. I was going to be in a Fortune 50 company. And then I had my daughter, moved back to the United States. We moved to South Georgia, which there was no Fortune 50 companies there. And I had my daughter, and it brought me back to my own childhood. And I don't know just how special and important it is for the people around you to like pour their heart and soul into you. And so I decided I've got to do something different, and I found nonprofit. I found Habitat for Humanity. I was working at Habitat for Humanity in Americus, Georgia, and that exposed me to a world of giving and a life of service. And now I have two girls, and I have really tried to be a role model for them, give them the kind of foundational elements of their childhood that I think that they will be able to use for the rest of their life. And I left Habitat, moved to D.C., went to another organization, Save the Children. And just at that time, my kids were around 10 and 14-ish. And their childhood was kind of, they were coming out of their childhood into their, you know, young adult teen years. And Kaboom and I found each other. And I just reflected on like looking at my girls and seeing these amazing women that were becoming better than anything that I ever was or ever will be, and thought, gosh, you know, the kids of the world are mine too. And I found a home at Kaboom. I've been here for 5 years, just doing really important work. We could talk a little bit about it if you want.
What a great sentiment that the children of the world are yours too. That's quite a statement. It does sound like despite the difficulties and barriers that you experienced in your childhood, that you had a very strong family and community sort of wrapping themselves around you and helping you to sort of make the changes and develop in the way that led you to where you are today. And I wonder if reflecting on that, you think that the family and community support was a big part of sort of your social and emotional learning. There's a big focus now, as you know, on SEL education, and just wondering how you think about that now as you are in this position at Kaboom?
Yeah, I for me it was everything, and I don't talk often about this, but you know, my aunt was murdered. My just story after story of just really a tough upbringing, and like I said before, like I wouldn't change my childhood for anything, because I had aunts and uncles and teachers and parents. My parents, though they were young, they just really put their heart and soul into me. And so in spite of being faced with obstacles, that I felt love. I think through everything else, I felt love, and I felt like the community around me, whether it be a teacher or my close family, was teaching me that whatever comes your way, you can gain the tools to get through it and then use it to do something better. That was constantly reinforced by all these good people that were around me.
That's great. Just to pivot a little bit, can you talk about, for those people in our audience who aren't familiar with Kaboom, can you just say a little bit about its mission and what it does?
Of course, I light up when I talk about Kaboom.
I can see that, yeah.
It's such special work, especially right now, and especially as we're talking about my own childhood. So Kaboom is a national nonprofit. We turned 25 this year. We've been working in the United States, Canada, Mexico for the past 25 years to really focus on bringing community voice together and kids, lifting up kids' voice to design great places for them to play. We think childhood is sacred, and that play and play spaces are the currency of childhood. I mean, I could draw out that playground that I still have the calluses from. And so we bring a couple things together. We bring the community. We work with a community for months and months to understand what are your needs, what is, you know, kind of the obstacles for your spaces, and ensuring that kids have a great place to play. We lift that voice up, we listen to it, and then from that we design a great place for them to play, and then we unify, typically as volunteers, though we're pivoting, but we unify volunteers to make it happen. And I think for us, these past couple of years have been really important, because we've been working for 25 years. We did our 3,000th playground in the same community we did our first. And though our work has always been focused on going where we think the need is greatest, we weren't looking explicitly at naming the disparities, particularly the racial disparities that exist on both access to play and how a kid and a person feels safe in a sense of belonging in that play space. And so we've made some pretty explicit commitments to closing that disparity gap and focusing our work on looking at the public systems, the schools, the parks, the housing, the public housing, where resources aren't being poured and there's not enough capital going in to really focus on the kids. And play is complementary. You know this, like play is complementary with learning and all of the things that are important for a child's well-being and healthy growth. Play for them is their currency. It's where they work out all those kinks. It's where they negotiate, where they take risks, like my first risk. So we are focused on working with both the systems and the strategic partners to first assess what's going on here. Where are their resources not being put into communities, which is, you know, from all the assessments we do, it's Black and brown communities. And let's understand that, and then let's pull together the resources to solve the problem at the scale it exists. So if we're looking at a public school system and we see that, oh, there's 70 schools within this system and 50 of them have great places to play and they're also in the kind of well-off neighborhoods and 20 of them don't, and they're in the Black and brown communities, that's where we work. And then the added part of our work is not just creating the play space, but it's how can we become a catalyst by lifting up community voice, by slowing down, by listening, by learning, by mobilizing local resources, by pulling local officials and local leaders into the process to engage and better understand community. The kind of physical outcome is a play space, but all of those add-ons around unifying around kids are what makes our work really special at Kaboom.
So Kaboom talks about what you're describing as play space equity.
Play space equity.
And that's a concept that I hadn't heard before. Obviously, I'm wondering, was that present at the beginning of Kaboom, or is that something that has evolved over time to sort of, as it were, meet the moment? We talk a lot about that now. So has the work sort of evolved over that time and more and more incorporated the need to mobilize communities and be basically an organizer of community residents to provide those play spaces?
Yeah, it's always been there, but not as explicit and not as intentional. So our work has always, our very first playground was in D.C. because two young kids, they were looking in their community. They lived in public housing. They were looking around their community for a place to play, and they found an empty abandoned car, and they lost their lives in it. And a reporter here in D.C. went out and found that within the 3-mile radius, there were no playgrounds. Yeah. And that was the birth of Kaboom, was, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why don't these kids have access to a playground? A kid shouldn't have to lose their life because they're just seeking out what they naturally do. So it has always been there. Like I said, we built our 3,000th playground a couple years ago, and it was in that same community. And though we had done 3,000 projects that were all, as much as we could, drawn toward where the need was greatest, we hadn't equipped ourselves, and we're still in the process of doing this. It's work in progress, urgent lifelong work is what others tell me.
You said that you sort of made this transition in your career from sort of a more corporate kind of trajectory to a nonprofit one. And I'm just wondering, in your own experience, were there any barriers that you encountered entering into the nonprofit community, especially as an African-American woman now in this leadership role at Kaboom? You know, what were the obstacles that you faced, and what would you tell young people who are, you know, beginning careers, social change careers, how to navigate, you know, those obstacles?
I think for me, I had spent about 10 years in corporate, which was an advantage because I kind of got to learn the other side and get some tools around marketing and PR that were helpful for me in nonprofit. But I think for me, one of the biggest barriers was that I had a different background than a lot of the people that I was working with. And so it's no secret that in philanthropy and nonprofit, there's a lot of white men leading organizations, and my background was different. I looked different. I've always been hungry and taken on extra projects, and so I've always found myself in boardrooms and in, you know, projects that were leadership projects, and I felt a little out of place. And I think it took me some time to realize how valuable my voice was. Though I lifted it up a lot, I held a lot back. I've never been as honest about myself as I'm being in this podcast, for instance. I held a lot back, and I think that's, you know, what a shame for my younger self to have held something so important in making decisions and ensuring that we're equipping ourselves as nonprofit leaders to be supporting and partnering with communities in ways that can build trust and authenticity. And so for me, it would be, you know, just stay true to yourself. We're a diverse nation and a diverse world, and we all bring a point of view, and feeling empowered and also feeling humble in that point of view, I think, is really important, because our voices, you know, as we're different around the table, they all kind of make up a 360 view of what's going on. And so I think that's the best advice that I would give to anyone, other than it is the most fulfilling thing that you could possibly do, is to put your energy into taking your superpowers and helping others.
Yeah, I think organizations always benefit from when their workforce can bring their whole self to the work, right? And you're sort of the living embodiment of that, I think, in your example, not just in the social sector, but I think just in every sector. And that's, it's very powerful.
Yeah. And I would say to others kind of that aren't like me, that aren't a Black woman, I didn't really lift up my voice until our former CEO. By the time this comes out, we will have announced that I am going to step permanently into the CEO position, which is
congratulations.
Yeah. it's a huge part of my story. But our CEO, James Siegel, he's a white man, and he is the first person that really allowed me and encouraged me to lift up my lived experiences in the workplace, and really pushed me to take on things. At Kaboom a couple of years ago, we took on explicitly focusing on, you know, what's wrong with us? Where are we not investing the right things? How do we become more equitable? How do we ensure that racial equity is also at the center of all we do? And I sponsored that work. So I was leading partnership development at the time. And James, who had all sorts of belief in me and didn't adopt to the normal standards of leadership, said, hey, you know, take on this work. We'd love for you to lead this work and be authentic to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's important to be authentic to myself, but to the other leaders around me and other leaders, you know, whether it be philanthropic or nonprofit, I think just giving people the freedom and safety just to be who they are in that kind of the full glory of whatever that is, I think it's really important because it creates a different kind of safe space for people to show up and offer them their full selves.
Yeah, and I think what you're speaking to also is the importance of allies taking on their responsibility and using their influence to create that kind of environment or that kind of atmosphere where you can thrive, where everyone can thrive and contribute all of themselves to the mission of the organization. So Lisa, we're in this moment now, which is unique for all of us, I think, in that we're living through a pandemic that has limited all of our abilities to interact socially, to be in those play spaces where we are in, you know, having sociability, dealing with other people, interacting, doing what we need to be active. And we're being told to exercise, but alone, basically. So, and that's been especially challenging, I think, for children and their families who are sort of sheltering in place and, you know, wanting to be more active and be outside. And kids actually have that natural instinct, right? They want to be outside playing. So how is Kaboom addressing that issue? And what advice really do you have for parents who are dealing with that problem?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked about this. And this is at the center of my heart and at the center of our work right now. I think play is always, and play spaces have always been a critical part of community and kind of getting out and, you know, socializing and working things out. And it has never been more important right now. You know, I think it's not just COVID, it's all that we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with a lot of adult problems. And meanwhile, our kids they're not seeing their teachers, they're not going to their playground, they're not hanging out with their friends, and they're peeking at the news, and there's just all sorts of potential trauma that they're exposed to right now. And so Kaboom, myself, we've never felt more of an urgency around ensuring that when kids go back and when kids are playing in play spaces again, that it's there. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things is there's this risk around propelling inequities that already existed. And so we, last year we were set to do 150 projects, and of course that everything changed and we adapted. We said, you know what? We have to make sure that these play spaces are there when these kids come back because they're at home with their parents who are frustrated and tired and working and, sometimes multiple jobs, just trying to figure it at home. We got to make sure that these play spaces exist, that they open and they open safely, and that they're prioritized, particularly in communities of color. So we built still about 44 playgrounds last year. We used our playground vendor to help us, and we engaged with community virtually and found all different ways to get kids to still design the playground and lift up community voice. But I can't stress enough the importance of just kind of taking a look outside of ourselves. I know I personally have had a really kind of high and low year, glued to the news and just trying to figure it all out and just taking a look outside of ourselves and thinking about how do we make sure that our kiddos come out of this really strong and resilient, not traumatized. And I think that a couple of things are necessary. One, for us to see the big picture of their life and just try to find whatever adult center space that we can find while they're at home with us, just to try and make things special. And then my team really is going to kill me for saying this out loud, but I want to do, it's our 25th anniversary this year, but I want to do in 5 years what we've done in 25 years, because I think that it has never been more important for kids to have their special space and to be reminded after a year or so of being inside and kind of shoot away, like I'm on a call or whatever the case might be, that there's a place for them and that their voice and their life and everything, their school, their teachers, all of that matter. And so we've had to adapt a lot. I think the good thing, if there's a good thing for us, it has really propelled us into looking at how can we better partner with peer organizations, peer nonprofits, municipal partners to get a good sense of where the gaps are? And just let's start doing that work. Let's just get it done so that when kids go back, they are all black, brown, no matter where you live, whatever your zip code, they are all going back to a place where there is somewhere for them to reconvene with their friends and work out their energy and have fun and take risks and all of that. So it's I think that's it. Other than that is just, let's just make sure we're staying kid-centric in our decisions as much as possible. And as tough as that is at sometimes.
Yeah, I think it has brought home to all of us, whether we have children or not. How important it is to wrap them in the sense of family, community, that you experienced as a child, and no matter what their circumstances are, that's a very important aspect of their development. Well, I've had a joyful experience talking to Lisa Ratliff, the incoming executive director of Kaboom. Congratulations again on that incredible achievement. And we're all going to be watching and learning from you in particular, but also from Kaboom. This is Gwen Walden. I'm Managing Director at Arabelle Advisors, and it's been wonderful to talk with you, Lisa, on our podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to From Idea to Impact. To learn more about the guests featured on this podcast and the work we do at Arabelle Advisors, please visit our website at www.arabelleadvisors.com.